Power Hour with your hosts, Nathan Payton and Ryan Briswell.
Welcome to another episode of the RX Power Hour here on RXMuscle.com. I'm your host, Nathan Payton. I'm joined by the world's largest co-host, Ryan Braceflow.
What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good tonight. Had a kind of a frustrating day. I've kind of changed up my whole schedule, trying to do my workouts in the morning now. And about 3 weeks ago, I pulled 735 completely raw, you know, no belt, no straps, no nothing. And, you know, it was a legitimate pull. And then this morning I go to pull again, and I wasn't even going to go real heavy. I even switched over to the Whippy deadlift bar, the Texas deadlift bar, and I went to 645, had my belt on, and that's it. And it was not necessarily killer, but it was hard. You know, a lift that should be simple, given that I've pulled 800 in just the belt. And I'm a little irritated, and I've been spending all day trying to figure out what the hell is going on. So maybe our guest on the show tonight can shed some light on something I'm doing wrong.
Well, the first thing he might shed light on, because I know he's big on keeping things simple, is he might try to tell you that you're overthinking things and just step up to it and pull it. But I'm just guessing.
Well, I took that same advice, because that's always been my principle as well. You know, even back before I started deadlifting with a suit and everything, is I would just walk up to the bar and yank it. I wouldn't sit there think about it. So I kind of tried both methods today, and neither of them worked, because I pulled 645 twice, and both of them just sucked. But, you know, I know deadlift's one of those exercises you have an off day. I understand that, but it's still frustrating when it's a weight that, you know, essentially I should be able to pull up any deadlift workout and do it fairly simple, and then I get there and it's not so simple, you know. So it's a little irritating, but I think I've got it a little figured out. Like I said, maybe Andy will help me, give me a little advice that I'm missing. But I think also one thing is I changed my workout schedule. And so now instead of doing kind of rotating deadlift and squat, you know, every other week, now I've been doing both of them each week, kind of doing bench day, deadlift day, squat day, and I'm thinking that might be a little too much for my body right now.
Well, and Ryan, might as well. I mean, the show has a purpose. We might as well let him in on, I guess the inner workings of things, because this gives me an opportunity as well to kind of chat with you and make sure that I'm caught up, especially coming out of our coverage of Nationals over the weekend on RX Muscle. I have recently changed up your diet. So,
yes.
We can start into this, basically, let folks kind of hear us interact with one another. We've changed up your diet. We were on a modified paleo-esque type of a diet, as we spoke about the last episode. We've changed that up recently. I still have you on what would be considered a modified form of that, but I have increased some areas throughout. Do you feel like you need more adjustments on my end, or do you feel like you are getting to know this, or where are you at?
The diet, I think, is fine, because when I pulled 735, I was doing, I don't think I had any rice or of any kind on my diet. I think it was primarily, fats and proteins, and the only fruits, I think, at all at the time were just fruit and whatever right. might have been in some of my vegetables. And the other thing that kind of irritated me is, during the weekends, as you know, and the listeners may not know, is I pretty much cheat all weekend. I just, because my routine is always totally thrown off, I go to Whataburger, I have an oven pizza or whatever. And so usually Mondays I feel pretty damn good because I'm all loaded up with sodium, I got all my carbs in there and everything. So instead of having a cheap meal, like say a bodybuilder, I'll probably have a cheap weekend, which surprisingly doesn't throw my body off too bad. As far as, like, gaining back a lot of water weight, I may only gain 3 pounds. But that was the shocker this morning, is that it was a Monday. If it was a Friday morning, I would kind of understand, say, if it was a carb issue, because by the end of the week, my body's more depleted and things like that. But I don't think that's the issue. So, I'm still going to add in the more carbs, see if that helps me fill out a little bit more, like, with this phase. But I don't really think that was it. I think it had something to do with my training setup and could have just been one of those off days. Deadlift's one of those days where sometimes the weight just doesn't want to go up,
Interesting.
But we'll get to something a little more happy. Let's talk a little bit more about Nationals. Nobody wants to hear me bitch and moan about my lifting. This weekend, for those that didn't know, me and Nathan did a live play-by-play You know, I had several friends that were at Nationals, so they were sending me texts, and I was, you know, getting texts, obviously, from Dionne Wessels, or not texts, but, you know, watching her Facebook page, like many of the strongmen out there. But using the combination of everybody, you know, we did a really good play-by-play on RX. I think we had, you know, somewhere around 3,000 hits, somewhere around there. Do you remember, Nathan?
Yeah, I think it was just under about 3,500.
You know, which I think is pretty damn good considering we really didn't know advertising that we were even going to do it. It was something I think Sally Ann talked to us and we set it up the day of or maybe the night before. And, you know, we didn't put it on any other website that we were doing it. So maybe that's something we might want to think about at the next big show or pro show or something like that is, you know, let people know that we're actually doing it. But regardless, we had a real good turnout, I think. And, you know, and just looking at the, not being there, but seeing the results that we were getting fed through Facebook and text messages, it sounded like a hell of a contest.
Oh, absolutely. I know the first thing that jumped out to me was that, unless I missed something, none of the heavyweights loaded all the stones.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a complete shocker to me. Not because, you know, it's so hard of a setup, but because there are so many good stone guys at that contest. And I know, you know, one of the guys who I would say is probably, he didn't end up winning, his name's Brad Audrey, probably the best amateur stone loader by far, I would think. He didn't load all five, and he easily loaded all five at the Arnold Amateur World Championships this year. And if I remember correctly, it was basically the same stone series. I'm actually thinking, judging by the time that it took to run that contest, a lot of the guys were just wore out.
Yeah, and especially a couple of the guys I know had 20-some-odd reps on the car deadlift, and things were just amazing what the guys, the total the guys were pulling. You had guys pulling sub-8-second, you know, runs with the giant frame. I mean, just unbelievable, you know, events that they were turning in. And, yeah, then the stones, I was like, wow, that's a shocker because the guys are of unbelievable quality this year. I was just real surprised.
Yeah, and speaking of the stones, I have to give Zach Nims a shout-out because he won his lightweight pro card, which, for those that are unaware, lightweights is 231 pounds and under, and he won his card there, but he also loaded the 390-pound stone, which was their fifth stone. So essentially, he did more stones than all the heavyweight guys. I think all their series was the same, except for they didn't have a 410 or 420 at the end. They had a lighter stone at the beginning. So, I mean, that's pretty damn impressive that the lightweight is keeping up with the heavyweights, at least on stones. Now, I'm not trying to take anything away from my heavyweight guys, you know, because I understand I've been there. At the end of a nationals competition, you're beat. You know, it's not like we're the, you know, we have cardio, but we're not like the lightweight guys. We get tired a little bit quicker. But the other cool thing I noticed, and just kind of a shout-out for them, is Brad Audrey and Jared Beakley. I know both of those guys have been injured, you know, in the past. Brad, I believe, actually had a surgery not even a year ago on his tricep. So the fact that both of them were able to come back and make it, I believe both were top five, which is awesome, you know, considering the injuries and everything. And our friend Alan Colley, who made seventh without even winning the event that we picked him to win. I think he got 15th, which was I couldn't believe. But right. The fact that he still stayed up and got seventh, I think, is awesome and shows, obviously, the improvements he's made on his overhead and the frame event.
Yeah, the frame event, I believe he was third in, so that was outstanding. You know, because that's grip as well as his speed. It was nice to see the grip right there for him when he needed it.
Oh, yeah, and he'll be the first to admit, you know, his baby fingers, as he calls them, you know, he was kind of worried about the frame, and I know he even had an injury, which I don't think he told anybody about. He's not the type to make an excuse for anything. You know, he actually injured his leg doing axle, which for those, you know, it's a thick bar, and when you have smaller hands, it's kind of hard to do, and he ended up hurting his leg by dropping the axle on it about a month ago. So, you know, have to give him props. He's a buddy of mine, so, of course, I'm going to be happy for him. You know, he got seventh. He's going to get to go to the Amateur World Championships. You know, and I guess we didn't announce it, but Eric Peterson won the heavyweight, and I've competed against Eric several times. I think he lost by half a point at my first nationals to David Hansen in Utah. And so, I mean, he's been there before and had his chance come really close to a pro card several times. And, you know, I think he'll definitely make a good pro. I mean, he's been at the top for 2 years now, just waiting for the right opportunity to get his card, you know.
And Peterson just reminds me, too, that I believe the lightweight Peterson got injured. I think he was near the top of the pack as far as the lightweight on his way to trying to earn the lightweight pro card. And I believe he suffered an ankle injury or something along those lines.
Yeah, I must have missed that update because I remember seeing him doing really well in events on some of the updates, and then all of a sudden I read the day after that he was injured, you know. So I must have missed it somewhere, but, you know, we were on the computer for about 10 hours each day trying to keep up with everything. So
yeah, those days were very, very long. And one of the guys blew a tricep, I think, doing the dumbbell, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, one of the guys got hurt on the, I think it was the first event, which is unfortunate. But, I mean, you got that 185-pound giant dumbbell, and you can get injured in several ways doing that event. It's not an easy event. I know I've irritated my shoulder just from, you know, you have this 200-pound dumbbell sitting on your shoulder, and or if you go to do a rep and miss, and it comes right back down onto the joint or on the bone, I'm sorry. I've even hit my ear, which hurts like hell.
Yeah, I can imagine. You don't have much. Well, better than it got your ear than it actually caught you on top of the head, though, I'm going to have to say.
Yeah, you get out of the way real quick on that event.
Yeah, I never knew you had cat-like agility until I saw one of those start to tumble.
That's how I roll, man.
And speaking of the dumbbell, if we will, I know one of the 175-pound competitors, I know they used the 150-pound dumbbell on theirs. And I'm just amazed by that. I know that there was one gentleman, and he was the only one that managed to get it up, and he got two reps with a 150-pound dumbbell. I think that's amazing, to weigh 175 pounds and basically press his own body weight, if you will, one-handed a couple of times. I mean, definitely amazing performance on that, too.
Well, just even saying that, you know, the 175 guy, like he's a small guy, is what I think makes the strongman contest interesting. Is, you know, to the average person, because these guys are 175, and usually they're ripped to the bone, 175.
Exactly.
It's not like it's the, you know, 15-year-old kid that's just skin and bones and happens to be 6 foot tall. You know, so these dudes are ripped up at 175, and they're the tiny guys, you know, compared to even the other lightweights who are 231 and completely shredded. You know, guys like Tom Mutafis who barely meet weight and are solid muscle, you know.
Yes.
So it's pretty interesting stuff. But I think that's all we have on the Nationals. Is there anything else that was going on with you this weekend or that you wanted to talk about today?
No, just give another shout-out to Mr. Dan Harrison. Let him know that I'm still waiting for him to accept a little invitation for me to kind of show him another way of going about things. You know, I may just keep bringing this up every single week, but I might get sidetracked, though, because, you know, Larissa Race is something that comes into my mind often, too. So I bring her up every week. Now Dan's, you know, who knows? We'll just see. Maybe they'll both stay in there the whole week long. But no offense to Dan. I kind of rather look at Larissa, but okay.
And actually, I saw her today. Not in person, unfortunately, but... I was sitting here before the show. I actually needed an energy drink, so my sponsor sent me a bottle of stuff, so I was having a little Maximize just to give me a little energy, just a small amount.
Right.
I ain't trying to be up all night. But anyways, I got my new issue of Planet Muscle in, and sure enough, there she's in there talking specifically about how she was, you know, trains to have the best butt out there, and it, you know, is going over her training techniques again, which I know you're a real big fan of. So I thought you might like that. I might have to let you borrow that issue, but it better not be sticky when I get it back. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, that's probably a valid concern. I may need to just go ahead and order my own copy then.
There you go. Well, I think that's all we need for today as far as people listening to us. So why don't we go to our first break, and when we come back, we'll have none other than the legend of deadlift as well as a legend in powerlifting, period, Andy Bolton.
Sounds great. I know he's calling direct from England, so looking forward to it. Rise and shine. I hope he's got his coffee on.
We'll see. This is Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton. We'll be back right after this message.
This is the RX Power Hour. Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. Speciesnutrition.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Now back to the RX Power Hour.
Welcome back to the RX Power Hour here on RxMuscle.com. I'm very pleased to be joined by, calling all the way from England at somewhere around 2:43 in the morning, the Babe Ruth, the king of deadlifting, Andy Bolton. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm a bit tired, but I'm good.
Well, thank you very much for getting up. We obviously greatly appreciate it, and we're very anxious to have you on the show. Obviously, the multiple world records and everything that you've accomplished in the sport definitely warranted us making sure you were top priority.
Yeah, no, probably welcome.
Thank you. And Ryan, I know I'm probably going to have to put a muzzle on you. Andy's definitely a big inspiration to your list, so I'm going to let you go right on in.
Definitely so, man. You know, I'm kind of a deadlifter myself, not near your caliber, you know, still below the 900s, not quite into that club yet. But I know for myself and a lot of guys out there, the biggest thing with deadlift is grip, in my opinion, because there's a lot of guys with strong backs. Very few guys can hold what they can pull up. And obviously you're pulling up more weight than anyone in the world. So, you know, is there anything special you do with your grip training or just deadlifting that maybe helps your grip to be able to pull up 1,000 pounds and hold on to it?
Well, to be honest, when I did the 1,003 pounds in New York in 2006, I'd never trained with grip up until that point. And the 1,003, it did start to slip in my left hand. So after doing the 1,003, that's when I decided to train with grip after that one lift. I'm a training for another year after that, doing different forms of grip training, pinch gripping with plates, fat bar holding for sets of 10 second holds, just doing that once a week. And then I pulled the 1,008 pounds and I held it at the top for about 10 seconds. So it did pay off in the end, the grip training I did.
So you've always had a really strong grip, then. It's not, I mean, of course you had to work it to hold those extra 5 pounds and hold them longer, but in general for you, you haven't had to change a whole lot in your training to be able to keep moving your deadlift up.
No, not really, no, because grip's always been strong, like I say. I mean, up to pulling 1,000 pounds, I've never trained with grip. I just trained deadlift as anybody else would train deadlift, you know, just every week. I just, when I pulled 970 at the Arnold in 2005, I think it was, the 971. I'd never trained grip training up until that point as well. You know, it just to hold on to it easy.
That's amazing. And Andy, if I remember correctly from, you know, basically following your training, you tend to typically train deadlift after your squat, all in the same workout. Is that still something that you're doing, or?
Yeah, that's something we're still doing now to this day. What it was, it happened years ago, must have been about 10 years ago. I was training squats on a Wednesday and deadlifts on a Friday. And we were coming to deadlifts, so I was pulling about 900, 920 at the time. And my lower back was just getting so much stress from doing squats and deadlifts separately. So one of the guys in the team just decided to say, well, no, look, let's try it on the same day. And I was the one who didn't really want to do that, you know, for a couple of, about 6 weeks, I kept on going back to twice a week, squatting, deadlifting separate days. But eventually, I did stick by it, and my deadlift went up 30, 40 pounds within 10 weeks.
Unbelievable. Do you think that's due to the CNS stimulation, or, I mean, what else could you attribute
that
to?
It's that as well. It's not getting as stressed. It's only getting that one big beating once a week, and your lower back's getting rested more. Like I say, you're only getting your lower back hit on that deadlift and squat workout in one day, then you're getting six, seven days rest before you do it again.
Right. Wow. And that's something that I don't think everyone is aware of. I mean, anybody who knows deadlifting, who takes it seriously in the sport, obviously is aware of your deadlifting accomplishments. And you know, as we kind of touched on the squat, as far as, you working that with your deadlift on the same day. I don't think a lot of people are aware that, you know, you've squatted well over 1,200 pounds, you know, as well as your, you know, mid 700 bench.
Yeah. Yeah, people sit there, every time I go anywhere, you know, it's always about Andy, he's a great deadlifter, but, you know, that's all that we seem to mention. And it's, wow. I mean, that squat, I'm only one of three or four men who's gone over 1,200 pounds. And I benched 727 only, mm-hmm. 5 weeks ago in the bull farm meet in Finland, Helsinki.
Now, Andy, most people who are good deadlifters are typically not going to be good benchers. I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to be a weak bencher, but usually they're not going to be a top-tier bencher. How have you been able to get such a high bench press but also have the same body mechanics to be able to pull so much? I mean, is there a certain build that you think you have that others don't, or just raw strength?
My bench has been stuck in the 600s for 10-20 years now. It's not moved. I've tried every system out there, you know, West Side, your big iron. Ryan Kennelly has helped me on bench. Everybody in the world has helped me, and it's just never. All the systems with the bands, the chains, twice a week benching, speed benching day, and a heavy day, deload and max effort, and all this. It's never worked. The bench has gone backwards. Then I got in touch with Bill Crawford from Metal Militia again. I mean, I knew Bill from the 2006 show in New York when I did the deadlift world record. It was Bill's show we were doing there. And Bill said, right, okay, so we need to drop some things that certain, yeah, because obviously my elbows were taking a lot of stick, so I had to stop all the push downs, stop all the skull crushers, stop the bands, stop twice a week, and just start benching, just benching. He worked on my technique and the shirt. It's all about the shirt now. It's how to use the shirt. So I'd send Bill videos every week of my benching. He'd send me some comments back to change this, to change that. And then within 12 weeks, my bench went from a 650 to a 730 in a 12-week cycle. So that's the meet in Finland in October.
Yeah, that's very significant. And I know, it's Andy, with your training, you do a lot of 2 and 3 board presses. Now, is that to tie in directly with the accessory work that you're doing as far as, like you say, the push-downs and things like that?
Well, I don't do push-downs anymore. I don't do nothing else but benching.
Really?
All the work we do is based around the boards, but it's raw boards. We train boards with no shirt.
Right.
I have benched 800 plus 850 to a 3 board with a shirt on. But then I went to the meet, and I got 690. I just got so uncomfortable at the bottom to try to touch. Where we build every week in the shirt, we touch. We do triples all the time. But I always touch the chest. I don't do nothing on the boards with a shirt on. All the stuff in the boards is done raw. 3 board, 4 board, 5 board, just working on that midweight lockout. And that's all it is. It seems to work.
Yeah, evidently.
Yeah.
Andy, I think on your website I was reading at the, sorry if I don't pronounce this right, the Bull Farm powerlifting meet, I think
farm,
it was,
yeah.
That after you did your deadlift, Benedict came up to you and was saying something along the lines of, you know, the suit isn't doing anything for you. Are you planning to do anything, you know, to get into more raw lifting, be it bench press or deadlift or any of them?
Well, what it is, after that, I was just so disarmed, because that's the same suit. But I said that straight away. I went on the website and I said, that's it, I'm ditching the suit. I'm going to lift raw from now on deadlift. But I pulled the two biggest deadlifts I've ever pulled in a suit, 1003 and 1008. But I was wearing the same suit. It was too tight. I've not put it on because I had injury last year, knee surgery last year, so I haven't really put the equipment on as much. So when I put it on, it was a shock. I did put it on in training. I just put it on one time, and that was the day of the meet. So the weights were coming away from my knees. I wasn't comfortable in the suit anymore. But since then, I went to Tennessee, and I did the Night of the Living Dead, and I pulled raw there. And it felt so much harder raw on my low back. So I've had a chat with John Enzer since this. I mean, John's talked, and we've, you know, we're going to get another suit, but I just need another suit that fits, basically. And I think I'm going to keep on lifting in the equipment because I want to lift for more years, and I think lifting raw is good, but it's a short-lived career. I don't think the body can take that much weight, you know, again and again and again. So I think I'll be lifting in the equipment from now on.
Now, do you lift in a multi-ply suit or single ply? Because I know a lot of guys lift in single ply for health, you know, like you're saying, the joints, but...
It's only single ply deadlift, so it's just like anybody else. It's a max DL, single ply. There's nothing adjusted on it. It's just got Velcro straps, that's all, so I can adjust the straps. People think, sometimes people email me saying, you know, what suit have you got, double ply, triple ply? I've tried double ply deadlift suits and fusion and these tougher suits, and all that happens, I cannot get to the bar. I'm pulling stiff leg. So all you need is just a... To me, all you need is a single suit. You don't need anything more than that for deadlift.
Andy, do you ever do rack pulls, basically, to work on even going beyond what you're pulling off the floor? Do you work rack pulls in, or do you ever use straps to go even beyond, or... What's your, basically what I'm trying to find out is, what's your way of testing what your utmost upper limit might be on a lockout?
I've done rack pulls using straps when I was younger, in my 20s. I pulled 1,050-something at 22 years old, 23 years old, from about knee height. Then went to the competition, I only pulled eight up in the low eights. So I do rack pulls now all the time, at the start of the workout, but the height of the rack is about shin height. It's quite low down, and I don't use straps. We pull from there for speed every single workout, so I can pull more weight off the floor than I can from the rack. If it's
that's amazing.
The right height, you should not be able to pull more than you can deadlift, because you can't get your legs into it. It's a hamstring and a lower back workout. That's all it's for. You know, I'm not using no leg drive. That comes afterwards, after I've finished them, and I work on the floor.
Interesting. That's a great point, because I think a lot of guys really get carried away thinking that, oh, it's all about the lockout, and you know, they'll try to rack pull 850 pounds when they can only go 500 pounds off the floor, and then they think they need to continue to focus on that rack pull, thinking it's going to translate to the floor, and like you said, it's all leg drive, so it just really doesn't mean much.
In the deadlift, to me, the biggest deadlifters in the world are the ones who get it from the floor, moving the fastest. If you can't move that weight fast, it doesn't matter how strong you are from your knees up. But if you can get it going fast enough, generate enough power from the floor, and keep it close to your body, you know, you've got a better chance of pulling it than you have somebody who pulls it slow than a slow puller.
Earlier in the conversation, when you were talking about your bench press, you were saying you tried, you know, everything you could think of, basically, to improve your bench. Do you use chains or bands in your squat or deadlift training?
No, I've never used bands on chains on my deadlift, never. All I've ever done is floor deadlifting and deadlifts on a board about shin height. Squatting, I've tried using chains. But I found after 4 or 5 weeks, I started to overtrain, and it just, I don't know, my squat went down, the speed of my squatting went down. When I squatted the 1214, I used no chains, no bands, just regular squatting. But it's the way that I train, it's based around a lot of explosive power out of the hole, and it's really, it's like a weight, I train like a simple, like a weightlifter, I fully train. Even in the lightweights, I'm not just going through the motions. I'm really exploding fast on that bottom part of the squat and working hard on that lockout. So, I mean, some people say, oh, yeah, I didn't use all these systems, but I do train hard, still on the left. I'm not just training nice and steady. I'm working, you know, lots and lots of sets of threes, fast, really working the explosive fibres. And it seems to work again. Been working.
Yeah, apparently. And Andy, another thing that I want to definitely ask you about is there a certain type of a diet that basically you've been following lately? You know, I know a lot of people are curious as far as what Andy's eating, you know, to achieve that type of strength level. Can you kind of, I guess, give an example of what type of a diet you're following these days?
Well, I mean, people are just, you know, I do eat a good diet. I mean, I've got a supplement sponsor, CMP, so I eat a lot of protein. I do a lot of protein, 3 to 5 protein shakes a day. That's in between the meals. morning. I eat a lot of rice, a lot of potatoes, a lot of bread. I can do loaves of bread, I can do 5, 6, 7 slices of bread in one sitting. Red meat twice a week, probably most of it's chicken, eggs, a lot of cheese. But I have got a sweet tooth as well. But I don't eat anything sweet until the evening. I don't eat anything through the day. I try to stay away from it through the day. And then once I get home from training at night, that's, if I want some sweets after my dinner, I'll have sweets. I'll have some chocolate. I'll have sweets.
It's all right.
But most of the time, it is a good diet. It's based around the protein drinks, because that's the only way you can get the calories in.
Right. And you're definitely a busy individual with your, you know, your training business and everything else that you've got going. So obviously, like you said, it's very difficult to get in the amount of calories that you need and the amount of protein.
Andy, have you done any strongman in recent times? I know you did it in the early part of the 2000s and late 90s. Is that something that you've played around with, even as just for fun, like in your training?
Yeah, I did it in 1993. I started doing it when I was 23. Cause back then, there were no real, all the powerlifting federations you've got today, all there was back then was the IPF or the WPC. And that's the only one I knew about. So, and the WPC wasn't that strong back then. So, I'd won it 3 times, the World Championships, and I got bored. So I decided to go, I got an invite to Strongman up in Scotland with Dave Webster, Douglas Edmonds, against Magnus, Manfred, Herbal, all the men. Did it for 5 years. Never really enjoyed it. I could never get my head around pulling a truck for 30 meters. I'd much rather stand up and just do it once, like an all-out strength event. But we had to run around the track, like 200 meters we had to run with his farmer's walk ball. I just thought, halfway around, I'm thinking, well, what am I doing?
I always find it funny that, you know, that when strongmen and powerlifters are talking, it's always, yeah. It almost seems like the strongman will be like, no, I just don't even get powerlifting because you're just doing those 3 lifts. But then when you talk to the powerlifters, yeah. They're like, well, what's the point in pulling a truck or lifting a stone? You know, yeah. It's like the things that the strongmen love about strongmen is the same exact excuse that the powerlifters don't like it, and vice versa.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think powerlifters are stronger. I believe powerlifters are stronger all out for one. But a strong man, you know, could do not as much weight, but the strong men today are a lot stronger than they used to be. You know, strong men today, really. They can be great powerlifters as well. But they're so fit as well. But a lot of them are so young. It's the way they're built. Or if you look at Brian Shaw, I know them guys, I think they're 6'7", you know, they're 400 pounds. And they're fit and they can move. So Jonas and Derek Poundstone, they're big men and they're strong and they can move. But it never did it for me, you know. I never really wanted to train hard for it because I didn't enjoy doing it.
Oh, yeah. Some people like vanilla ice cream, some people like chocolate. You know, that's just how it is.
Yeah, that's it. So,
well, Andy, talking about and focusing on something that I know you do get, let's talk about the Andy Bolton Deadlift Challenge.
Yeah, that's been set for May the 28th in Cleveland, Ohio. I got fed up of... It's not the lifters. The thing is, it's not the lifters who talk about themselves. It's other people on the internet saying he can do this, you know. But if he put this on, he could do B and B, and he could, you know. So many people saying ifs and buts. So I just decided to put a challenge out, you know, to everybody. Let's all go from all sports, any sport you want. Let's all go into a deadlift and let's just see who's the best. And
who's open to that? Who can jump in there? Who's invited?
There's a few men. The main rivals, I mean, the toughest men out there right now is Benedict Magnus.
Yes.
Sir Jonas. Obviously, Sir Jonas is a big puller. Derek Poundstone's in there. You've got Mark Felix from England, Terry Ollins. There's so many names. Kiklaev. I think Kiklaev's gone back to weightlifting now, I think. So I don't think he'll be doing it. You've got that Constantine from Latvia.
Now, is he going to do the challenge? I heard he's not doing it for some reason.
It's Phil turns up, eh?
What was that? I'm sorry?
Well, just Phil turns up. Phil's brave enough to turn up on the day.
Gotcha. Now, outside of yourself, out of the people you know that are planning to come, or maybe that might show up on the day of the competition, you know, if you took yourself out of it, who would you say is the best deadlifter out of that group?
Benedict Magnus from Iceland, by far.
Yeah, he's definitely a pretty damn good puller.
He's a good puller, but also Benedict. I mean, I spent some time with Benedict over in Finland. He's not only a good puller, but his grip is one of the best grips I've ever seen. You know, that man could hold on to 1,050, 1,060. I don't know if he'd pull it right now, but he could hold it. And he'd give me some tips on grip work, so I'll be trying them. I'll be training that way for the next few months and seeing how that goes.
Andy, let's go ahead and talk about your personal training business. I understand you're actually using Skype technology. Like when I introduced you, you're actually in England, but people have the opportunity to train with you one-on-one, face-to-face through the technology of Skype. You also are having 1 to 3 day, what you call internships, where people have a chance to come train with you and your powerlifting team. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, I've been training people now. We've got a team here in Leeds. It's about 20 strong, you know, with two teams. And I've been really training most of these people for almost 20 years. And I've been training without even knowing it. So as I'm getting older now, I'm wanting to give something back, you know, and I want to do something else. I don't want to change direction. I want to stay with powerlifting and strength and training. So I've gone back to college. I've taken the exams in strength training. I've just passed those. So set up the website. I do one-on-one. I've just, like I say, I've just added the Skype. I think that's the way forward. People want to see, you know, people want to see you face-to-face now. We've been so far away in England. It's okay talking to somebody on a phone, but people actually want to see you. I think Skype and all that now is the way forward. Internships, that's something new as well. So a few people coming over, a few strength coaches from Ireland have come over. Spent 3 days with me. I've trained them. They've watched me train. We've gone out for dinner, done questions and answers, and they've gone back, you know, with like 50 pages of notes and all the different ways I train, from nutrition, training, everything I do, from top to bottom. So they've gone away happy, you know. And it's picking up. Yeah, it's doing good. But hopefully one day I want to come back to America. You know, obviously my wife's American. My wife's from Florida, so I'd like to come back over there and maybe do some strength training over there when I finish powerlifting.
Now, Andy, for people who are interested in these services, where would they get a hold of you? Do you have a? I mean, obviously you have a website. You know, if you want to give us the address or even a phone number or email address.
Yeah, you can go on andyboltonstrength.com. It's www.andyboltonstrength.com. Everything's through there. Yeah, the phone numbers are on there. They can email me at andy@andyboltonstrength.com again. All my emails go to me. I answer all the emails personally. As long as nobody else doing them, it's all come from me.
Very cool.
So the website, it's the website or the email, and I'll get back to them within a day most times.
Okay. Well, I think that covers most of the stuff that you know we had in mind to ask you about. Is there anything that, you know, was on your mind that you'd like to tell our listeners about, be it an additional contest that you're going to be doing or just anything related to your training that they might be interested in knowing?
Well, just really, any powerlifters out there listening to this, just to say that the biggest mistake in powerlifting is people try to train too heavy. To see the guys in the magazines, on the internet training, and the main thing is train with explosive power. If you can train a lift explosively and keep it in good form, you know, no cheating, everything straight, but keep it fast, and you're into a meet like that, after training like that, all the energy you're storing up, you're saving all the energy. Get to the meet, you're so much stronger than a guy who's in his maximums every week, trying to grind out these big deadlifts, trying to itch his legs, you know, shaking it up like some of strongmen seem to do. It's just to keep it simple and don't get confused with all these systems. You know, you read a book and it's West Side this, Big Iron this, use this band, that band. It's become confusing. And for the lifters starting out, just keep it simple. You know, that's all I've done. That's all I've done all the way through, and it's still working for me, so it could work for somebody else.
I think that's some great advice. That's it. Kind of goes along with the flow that I kind of told our listeners on our first show is keep it simple, stupid. You know,
yeah,
don't be dumb, but just don't try to overthink
it.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on tonight and getting up early. We know that, you know, that's a big commitment for you to wake up at, you know, basically 3 in the morning to talk to us tonight. But I'm sure our fans will love hearing from you because I know in the States especially, you know, people don't get to see you as much. You know, so we just wanted to say thanks again. And is there any sponsor that you'd like to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, there's a supplement sponsor in England, cmpprofessional.com. It's .co.uk. They're a supplement sponsor that I've had since 2003. They've helped me out with everything I've ever needed with flights, supplements, no questions asked. It's there for me 2 days later. Obviously, Inza as well. John Inza's been sponsoring me now for 5 or 6 years. And everything I need from John's great as well. And they're the main sponsors, really. That's what I need.
Well, again, Andy, we really appreciate you coming on, and, you know, maybe sometime in the future we can have you on again, or maybe if you're in the States, you know, we'll get you on when it's a little bit a better time of day.
Yeah, no problem. I'll do that. Yeah, not a problem.
Well, thanks, Andy. I really appreciate taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome.
You have a good day, man.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon.
And bye-bye. Andy Bolton, we'll be back after this commercial break and be on with our next guest, or we might close out the show. We'll just have to figure that one out.
This is the RX Power Hour. Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit speciesnutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Now back to the RX Power Hour. And we're back with finishing off our third episode of RX Power Hour. We had a little confusion after Andy whether we were going to have another guest or not. We were planning to have Dion Wessels on again to kind of finish off our little chat about Nationals. But I've been texting with her, you know, throughout the conversation and earlier today, and it's probably not going to happen. Her and our friend Alan Colley were actually in a little bit of an automobile accident. Luckily, no one is hurt or anything of that nature, but they're a little tied up right now, as you might guess. At first, I was a little worried the wreck was my fault because I'm texting Dion when she tells me she's in a wreck, but I found out after a few more texts that Alan was driving, not her, so I was a little happy about
that. And that's it. Yeah, that sums up everything. Alan was driving, so now we kind of know what's up.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, we can kind of recap, you know, what we learned from Andy, and I think just he kind of helped me out right off the bat with his, you know, telling us about the doing squats and deadlift on the same day. That is probably my issue because I've been lifting heavy on both exercises every week.
Yeah, with Andy, he definitely made it a point that he had tried in the past different things and it just didn't work for him. He couldn't recover in time. And then he said he lifts with maximum intensity every time he does it. He full speed, full power off the floor every time he lifts, same with his squat. And he's as adamant about the benefits of, you know, he squats and then later on he finishes off that workout, you know, with his deadlift and, you know, just basically focusing on everything off the floor. I was actually surprised that he talked about, you know, he does rack pulls and things along those lines, but that's about it, and he doesn't even necessarily focus on that. He is an off-the-floor guy. It's leg power, leg drive, everything was basically legs, and he goes for maximum intensity regardless. You know, his tip as far as to the listeners there at the very end, you know, where he mentioned it doesn't matter if it's a lightweight or a heavyweight, you know, if you want your deadlift to go up, you know, maximum intensity, off the floor, explosion, 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 you know, and eventually that lightweight, becomes a heavyweight.
Well, definitely, and it seems like a lot of the best deadlifters, I know even, I'm going to totally screw his name up, so I'm not even going to try the last name, but Constantine, we'll call him, everyone knows who I'm talking about. You know, he pretty much says the same thing in some of his Q&As, is it's always about speed. Everything he does is about speed. And I do find it interesting the varied opinions, because I know Constantine does a lot of band work and things of that nature, whereas Andy doesn't like any band work. And I find that very interesting. He doesn't like it for squats or deads, when, you know, at least a lot of the guys in the U.S. are big time into bands, like the guys that do the West Side style training. You know, it's a big deal. And it's very interesting to me to hear him say he doesn't like it. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, he doesn't, you know, mince words as far as, you know, a lot of guys will be like, well, I use it here or there, or sometimes I put it in, or it's in my cycle. Oh, no. I mean, he made it clear, no, I pull off the floor, and that's always worked for him. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, Ryan, about, again, because of your deadlifting ability, and to kind of, I guess, get a clear picture in my mind, you know, the way that Andy deadlifts, he's really adamant about pulling with an arched spine. And this isn't something that he talked about in his interview. We basically didn't have time to get to it. But the way Andy lifts is he's really adamant, you know, his spine is arched down at the lumbar. He does not let anything round, you know. And of course, it's for injury prevention. We all know, don't round your back, don't round your back. But can you kind of explain, I guess, the difference for the listeners out there when somebody's talking about the critical importance of deadlifting with an arched lumbar spine but not a rounded lumbar spine?
Well, as you might guess, I'm not really the technical guy, the guy here. I mean, the main thing is when you start rounding everything, you lose all your support. You know, you go from being stiff like a board to being a jellyfish. And next time, and when you start doing that, that's when you start blowing discs out. You might know a thing or two about that, maybe.
Yeah,
we won't get into that,
no.
Though. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I think you also, you're going to have more power with that arch. You know what I mean? Like I said, I find when I screw up my form, you know, which everyone does here and there, maybe you're not thinking, maybe you don't get enough air in your abdomen, it just loses all your power. You don't have that stiffness. You know, because like he's saying, on deadlift, especially a conventional deadlifter, it's all leg drive. Well, if you don't have that tight, arched back, when you go to push those legs, and, you know, especially when you're talking 800, 900 pounds or 1,000 pounds in his case, if you don't have that stiff, arched back, those hips are coming up and the bar is staying on the ground. And then when you try to keep pulling, you're just talking about injury. You know what I mean? So you have to make sure that you have that stiff spine and get everything up, or else you're just asking for injury. And, you know, and Andy's he's a testament to that, because he's 38 years old and he's had some injuries, but to my knowledge, he's never had a back injury. You know what I mean? And you're talking about a guy who's the best deadlifter in the world. So for him to not have a back injury, that kind of, and also I'd like to say this, that kind of throws the whole myth out the window that deadlifts are bad for you.
Oh, and I'll be the first one to say that, you know, again, with my own, you know, spine issues, nothing has helped my spine more than deadlifting, even though that's against conventional wisdom and even, you know, doctor's orders. I 10 years ago, I was told point blank, don't ever pick up anything over 50 pounds in my life, you know, or, you know, basically all hell's going to break loose and I'm going to be on a slab cut open like a pig or something. But, you know, nothing has helped more than deadlifting. You know, basically you build yourself, lack of a better term, I have built an artificial spine. I don't have a good one, but, you know, with the muscle development around the spine, you basically build an artificial support system. I like to kind of visualize myself as well as little alien bastards running around from the movie Aliens or Alien vs. Predator or something. So it's kind of like my own fake exoskeleton, but it's definitely, you know, like you said, I don't think anything's more helpful for a person with a bad back than deadlifting. And again, somebody of Andy's caliber is certainly inspiring.
I guess I'll have to take a little bit of credit for you deadlifting now, since I'm the one who told you to quit being a vagina and go deadlift.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be the first one. You know, people don't know that either. You know, Bracewell, definitely. I'd never deadlifted again since I was in... I mean, yeah, it had been, you know, I'd blown my back out, but even before then, you know, you're talking many, many, many years going back since I had ever deadlifted. And then when the back injury occurred again, like I said, the wise medical community made sure that I knew never to pick up 50 pounds and, cross my toes and spit in the
Which,
wind
in my mind, that ensures that you're just going to re-injure the area, because then that entire area is going to be weak again.
Well, right. And basically, if you really think about it, exactly like you said, the medical community basically preaches atrophy. What they were preaching to me was atrophy. Their advice for me was, your back sucks, this has occurred, so we would like you to basically do absolutely nothing with it ever. So atrophy is a wonderful way to heal any condition if you live in ass backwards land. So again, with Bracewell's urging, I very nervously took up deadlifting, and again, nothing has helped my back more than deadlifting. And even with that, that's why I always ask Ryan questions, even like I am here on the radio show, even though maybe I guess I could have picked up the phone and called him. It's just so critical, because I know there's a lot of people out there like me. I know there's a lot of people out there like Ryan. So you've got people who are at the top of their athletic game, and you've got people who are maybe rehabbing injury or just, working on self-improvement. And there's so many of these exercises that basically apply to everyone across the board. You just have to find what's the best way for you, or the technique, what works for you. A lot of conventional wisdom says I should sumo deadlift. No, that doesn't work for me. It's actually more taxing on my back due to where the injury is at than a conventional pull.
But you're not the only one who regained ability by doing deadlift. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you don't need to do accessory lifts as well, but even Derek Poundstone has been injured before. I don't know exactly what his injury was, but I do know he said in an interview that they said he'd basically never lift again. And this was before he was the three-time, America's Strongest Man and, World's Strongest Man competitor and all that stuff. So he's done that since he was injured and was told, you're never going to be able to lift again. It's not just you. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that are living with that pain because the medical community is saying don't lift. That's why you need a physical therapist like Mike Johnston, who's not only a big-time power lifter, but ex-lightweight strongman, who will basically tell you that's bullshit.
Right.
Which we will be having him on in the future to give you guys some good information about rehab, and he's very knowledgeable about powerlifting injuries, strongman injuries. He's trained with Chuck Vogelpohl, he's trained with Donnie Thompson, and as well as many other strongmen. So he's got some knowledge in those areas.
Yeah, and the other thing that's helped, definitely with deadlifting, and is an accessory for anybody to look into out there, either for their own gym or for their own personal use, is the reverse hyper. And I know a lot of people have no idea what that is. But, the reverse hyper is unbelievable in its ability to not only be of therapeutic value for the spine, but also to build tremendous strength in the spine. And, Ryan, why don't you go ahead and kind of describe the one that we have?
Well, we have the one made by Louis Simmons. It's an adjustable tilt reverse hyper. We also have a rope, what I call just a rope reverse hyper. It's just an older model. And, essentially everyone's done a hyperextension, which is where you're, laying with your feet in the air and you bring your chest up, or you bring your back up, actually, so you're almost in a flat position, but your upper body's hanging in there. And the reverse hypers are essentially the opposite of that. Your chest is on a pad, and you're swinging your legs upward. So the cool thing about it is when it pulls you back under, you're actually tractioning the spine, and it's, relieving pain, but also building strength at the same time. That actually would have been a good question for Andy to ask him if he does any accessory work, kind of like the reverse hypers, or if he sticks with more traditional things like good mornings and just hyper extensions.
Right.
Guess what?
Well, he did give his email contact and things like that to the folks, as well as his website. So, if there's anybody out there that's curious about that and doesn't want to wait for us to get around to the answer for him, feel free to contact Andy directly. Like you said, he gets back with people within a day. And as you saw, he's in England. He was calling in basically at a little bit less than 3:00 in the morning. So I know that the guy will definitely respond and take the time to address people's concerns. So, yeah, that's definitely a great route for people to be able to have.
Well, I think that'll just about do it for us tonight, Nathan. I don't think we want to quite let the cat out of the bag on who we're planning to have next week, but people stay tuned. Check out Minor Nathan's Facebooks. Once we have a confirmation, we might let y'all in on the little secret ahead of time. But until then, I think this will conclude our episode of RX Power Hour. And this is Ryan Bracewell and Nathan Payton. See you guys next week.
The RX Power Hour is a presentation of RXMuscle.com. Tune in. next week at the same time for another edition with Ryan Bracewell and